Milwaukee County Transit Paratransit System, page 255.
Before we start, I will say that I believe for the contract regarding transit and paratransit, that there will be a hearing that Supervisor Mayo would chair for the next Transportation Committee meeting, and that item, I believe, will be before this committee during the next cycle as well. Just to make it such an announcement, to make an announcement. Okay, proceed, please.
Good morning, Mr. Chair and committee members. Mike Juneau, Managing Director, Milwaukee County Transit. I'd like to briefly touch base on a few items of our budget. From the fixed route side, we're not seeing any service levels lowered. Everything is being maintained. And from a fare side, there are no increases. So that's good news. Mr. Dranzik talked about the phased implementation of the fare boxes that are coming in. Along with that, in the budget document, you'll see a proposed fare structure. There are no changes in the fares that exist today. However, we are proposing some new fare media for the public, which we can talk about if you would like. But again, no fare increases with that. On the paratransit side, the passenger fare has been reduced from $4 to $3. Unfortunately, there was a miscalculation, and we have a $1.5 million shortfall related to that. Expenditures, we see a decrease in expenditures, mostly due to operation savings in pension, fuel, and healthcare costs. On the revenue side, we see a decrease, and that's mostly due to a decrease in CMAQ funding. However, we will be able to continue the express routes, as we will be carrying over some money, and we'll be using those savings that we talked about on the expenditure side to maintain that service through the rest of the year in 2014. With that, I would take any questions that you might have.
Supervisor Smith.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Could I just, and with Mr. Fudge's help, I presume, too, I don't have the memo in front of me. One of the things to try to make up for the 1.5 deficit here was that CMAQ funding. So could I get my arms around exactly, because we're talking about CMAQ funding running out, and where we get the other CMAQ funds from? Could you clear that up? Because in the here it says, you know, we're taking the remaining balance to help balance this out. This is one of the questions I had, I guess, when I looked at some of your ideas here. Well, this seems to be a little tentative, and can we rely on it? And would you mind going over that? Because I think it enters into this discussion anyway. I would ask that, Mr. Chairman, please. Thank you. Or maybe Mr. Dranzik can help, too, whatever. I'd like to hear both, maybe.
Mr. Chairman and Supervisors, I'm going to defer to Brian just to explain where the CMAQ funding currently is and go from there.
Sure, Mr. Chairman, Supervisors. The department made a request for CMAQ this year. We're still waiting to hear the determination of what projects will get awarded. We have made a request for an extension, a one-year extension of the red, blue, and green lines, which are currently in place. That total request is somewhere about $10 million for the continuation of those three routes. We also had two additional routes that we are looking at for the future starting in 2015, which would be Route 27 alignment and a Route 3010. And those two total about $32 million. So, and that would be for the 3 years of operating that. CMAQ's a three-year program, so the red, blue, and green alignment had 2 years of funding when that came up a couple of years ago. We're seeking the third year in that application. So we don't have definitively what we'll get funded for in terms of those projects. We still have to wait for that determination to be made by Sewer PAC, State of Wisconsin, and the review group that makes that determination. From what I'm hearing, that most likely will not occur until probably later October, maybe into November, when we get those announced.
Well, the other part of my question was, and I'm not clear yet, what part of that was in this budget repair? There was one of the points that Mr. Fudge made in trying to rectify the $1.5 million hole we started here because of the mistake, okay? So I didn't hear an answer in that. Could you help on that?
Sure. Mr. Chairman, Supervisor, the goal is that part of the reconciliation was that we assume we will receive some CMAQ funding, certainly, hopefully, certainly more than the $500,000 that was in the memo. And then that would free up levy funds currently dedicated towards the operation of the express routes. Then $500,000 of that levy could then be used to offset part of the paratransit error.
Okay. And I guess I pretty well understand. Well, here's my take problem, and it's not a popular one, I'm sure, but I think if a mistake is made in the department, I know you got some other ideas to fix it, and you know it's based on CMAQ, and maybe we get it. And, you know, it doesn't seem all coming through. I think budgets should tend to take care of themselves, and I know we rely on other departments to help out in the overall picture. But I know increases in fares are never popular. Increases in the paratransit, we're going down from $4 to $3. But what I'm saying is, is there anywhere in your, you know, trying to figure out the 1.5 where transit itself takes some responsibility besides the CMAQ funding to help fix that hole that was created?
Mr. Chairman and Supervisors, it's a very complex issue due to the proposed contract. Because there are performance measures based on the surplus or deficit, the fiscal operation, we did not want to assume or stick transit, if you will, with fixing it because of that. So the goal certainly, and obviously there's a lot of volatility in the transit budget. We didn't want to have transit start off with a $1.5 million hole, due to a mistake made by our office.
Okay.
And so we looked for other items elsewhere in the budget that would not directly impact transit itself, especially, or other departments. And so that's why you saw the other items in the proposal.
Okay. I guess I appreciate that. Okay. But I guess my point is here again that in budgets in the last analysis, when they work with DAS and stuff, that if there are problems in certain areas, I want to make sure that there you find other ways. We can always find ways to get money. Supervisor Mayo is very good. If he brings in amendments, we find money somewhere else, and we need to do that too. If we're going to be raising in some areas, we need to find some money. Now you've done that, and we've done a lot of this already. As we've seen, we're finding monies other places. I'm just saying I want to feel confident that in some, and I'm not picking on transit. I hope you don't get that, okay? But I'm just saying in every budget area, there always seems to be a problem. We'll work out and we'll find some way to fix it. There's always room to make some changes and adjustments. And I guess I'm if transit feels they've exhausted, is there anywhere else to go? And anywhere there's a deficit, anywhere people are asking for money, I'm just asking, since we seem to be able to find it. It's hard for us to find the money, okay? I guess I'm asking the department chairs, the people running the organizations, and our staff, and DAS's help, too, they seem to find money in places because they know where to look. When I see, and in Mr. Fudge gave us some ideas here, I'm not sure I'm sold on those ideas to make up that 1.5, is what I'm saying. And I don't want to put an unfair burden on transit, but I'd like any department that has a deficit, whether it's a mistake or not from DAS, that they have try to do something to that gap. Because it's like we make adjustments everywhere else. In the zoo budget, we always say, well, let's do some corrective action, right? Okay. So I'm just wondering if there's any corrective action possibilities and when the transportation committee looks at this stuff too, and how How solid is the CMAQ funding? I'm really scary on that stuff. I know the things run out. Where do we get the income then to back it up? I know the goal is, you know, we don't want to raise fares. You know, we like to get less in paratransit, but, you know, I'm wondering if that's such a great idea that we drop a full dollar. Or, you know, I know it's not very popular to talk about that, but, you know, I want to make sure that everybody's kind of holding their own weight and not to be... And I'm expecting every department to try to do that. Are you following my drift there? Transit?
Mr. Chairman, Supervisor, yes. I did follow your drift. And, you know, as I pointed out in the first email, obviously the $1.5 million is a very small percentage of transit's overall budget. But the fact is, in this budget, we take away, based on... recent ridership trends, a lot of the surplus the transit has had in recent years is because of paratransit rides declining.
Right.
Well, now we're getting down to the actual ridership, so that's kind of the reason we wanted to look elsewhere in other areas for funding.
Well, I'm going to come and stand up. I'm sure Supervisor May will be looking at that too. Thank you. Thank you, Mr. Chairman.
Thank you, Supervisor. Supervisors Jerzyk, Hasta, Lipscomb.
On the information on the fixed route, and I also remember the county executive specifically mentioned this in his board address. You talked about service increasing by 20,300 some miles, and I look at the chart. We actually lost mileage between the 2012-2013 budget. I think part of that. I'm not sure if it was due to adding the red, blue, and green lines, and I'll ask you to clarify it. But then we pick up a little bit of mileage in 2014, which you summarized at around 20,300, but we're still well behind the annual bus miles from the 2012 budget. So would you please flesh that out a little bit? Where did we gain 20,000? Between this year and last year, and where is really the net loss from 2012?
Mr. Chair and Supervisor Jerzyk, we made some adjustments during the year to look at where we needed to provide some extra service with some overcrowding, especially during the peak hours. And so that additional mileage and additional bus hours that you see in the budget reflect what we did to try to get those service levels a little more aligned with what was actually happening.
So they're not new miles. They're just serving busier routes on the same route, basically.
That's correct, Supervisor.
You know, I mean, I represent the South Shore, and even though we pay county property taxes, we don't get service. And I know the 27th Street corridor needs more bus service. Howell Avenue needs more bus service. Oak Creek's main street is going to be Howell Avenue as they build the city center. And I get phone calls from time to time asking for bus service to go further, especially down Howell Avenue there, as that becomes a very busy street. And, you know, all we do is talk about how are we going to maintain what we have, lost funding. And I at least want to make a plea for some service to these county residents who are paying tax levy and don't get the service. So, you know, we've got to continue to try to understand that we are not serving everyone with our buses. And I don't know what the answer to that is. I know the dollars are tight, but the population is moving south for the most part to some very busy business areas, and we're not getting the bus service. So I don't know if you want to respond to that. It's kind of a comment from me. You're in agreement, I'm sure. Thank you. Thank you, Mr. Chair.
Thank you, Supervisor. Supervisors Haas, then Lipscomb.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Supervisor Jerzyk asked the bulk of the questions that I just had, so thank you for that. We were told that this is going to help service the busiest routes, which, well, I know they need them. Is this going to lead to a decrease to less used routes? Will they see much of a change under these added miles?
Mr. Chair and Supervisor Haas, no, it will not. When I answered Supervisor Jersic's question in relation to the additional miles and the additional service hours, it was related to those additional buses that we put out there to provide service during the busy times. It has no impact on reducing service in other areas.
So the other routes won't see a change?
That's correct.
But there will be greater service to the busiest times and the busiest routes?
Mr. Chair and Supervisor Haas, that's in existence today. We're just carrying that over into next year's budget.
Okay. Thank you, Mr. Chair.
Supervisor Lipscomb.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. back to paratransit for a minute. So when we talk about the dollar decrease in fare and the $1.5 million issue, am I correct then to understand that if we just didn't change the fare, we don't have a deficit? I mean, what we keep sort of dancing around the, you know, what are all the different alternatives for how we fix a proposal that wasn't ours? But I mean, it seems to me when we had the discussion last year about lowering all fares, it didn't cost us $1.5 million. So, I mean, if we're going to find $1.5 million, there might be other fares I'd rather that have broader implication that I might want to spend $1.5 million on. Am I accurately understanding that,
Mr. Fudge?
Mr. Chairman, Supervisor, ironically, if you were to reject the reduction in the cash fare, the deficit would only be the $500,000. The original error that was made to increase the revenue from where it currently is. So if you wanted to set it back to where it currently is, you would only have to reduce revenues by $500,000, and that would be the extent of the issue.
You'd only have to reduce revenue by $500,000, so then we have to come up with $500,000 in some. Okay, so it's $1 million. The true cost is $1 million, but $500,000 was the adjustment, which was lost when went from the department to the administration. Okay. All right. And then, so talking about another $500,000, last year I believe we added $500,000 in, I'll call it the transit security surge, yet there's no mention of that in this narrative that I saw. Is that continued? Is it discontinued? Was it successful? Was it unsuccessful? Are we trying to forget about it, and so that's why we don't talk about it? Well, I don't understand.
Mr. Juneau.
Mr. Chair and Supervisor Lipscomb, that service is continued in this budget. So,
at the 2013 level, or
that's correct.
Okay. So was it 1.5?
Correct.
We increased it by $500,000 to 1.5, or
yeah. Mr. Chair and Supervisor Lipscomb, that's correct.
Okay. And what has been the result for the increased investment?
Briefly, we added 12 employees. 11 of those are bus riding employees. We added a patrol during the service hours. So basically, we went from 884 hours on a weekly basis to 1,360 hours on a weekly basis. We have service on weekdays from 7 a.m. to 1 a.m. We expanded service on weekends. We now have 12 noon until 1 a.m., both on Saturday and Sunday. And so the amount of time that patrols are out there and bus riding is going on has increased. We continue to monitor that to see if there's adjustments we can make to possibly get service out a little earlier and a little later. Obviously, if we do that, we have to take away from what we're doing now, but we continue to have discussions with a security team, which includes local 998, and they're asking us to see if there's a possibility of extending that. So working within these numbers, we're able to address some of the school issues a little more directly. We're able to have some more quicker feedback to the bus operators with their concerns. And so it's a little better presence that we have out on the street, on the buses, and little better response to our bus drivers.
I guess I'd like to see some data. I mean, are we, this was a huge issue last year. Obviously some people wanted sheriff deputies, others wanted just more presence, and if that meant we had to use G4S, then obviously it's more cost effective. But I'd like to understand what we really got for it. I mean, I'm assuming that for more hours we've got more contacts, and you know, are we seeing that operators are calling dispatch now? Where, you know, it's my impression was that in some cases they sort of stopped because they had lost confidence in there being any response, and so we should see an uptick in their use of our private security if in fact they're feeling that presence or believing that it's working. So what are we seeing, and if you don't have the data, can we get that data? Because I'd like to know, particularly if we're going to continue that investment.
Mr. Chair and Supervisor Lipscomb, yes, we can provide that to you.
Appreciate that.
Thank you, Supervisor Borkowski and Supervisor Bowen.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. And I want to go back to the contract because I continue to be confused, and I know that doesn't surprise any of you. And I guess, you know, the announcement was made, I think, earlier this summer about MV Transport. And I'm not here to talk about, you know, who's better than who or whatever. I would like to understand, though, okay, so in developing this budget, okay, with the thought that we're not sure who we're going to select, now granted we have a safety valve with the fact that MCTS has an additional contract for 2014, and so we have that time to use. And Mr. Chairman, I heard you say that Chairman Mayo is going to schedule this and you're going to schedule this, and I actually had not known that prior to this meeting, so that's good. But I guess what I'd like to know is, in formulating this budget, what numbers were used? Was the MV Transport numbers used, or was it MTS numbers used?
Supervisor, I believe that the numbers were used had nothing to do with MV Transportation. I believe the numbers that were used as far as the budget is concerned. Okay. Now, as I said earlier, and plus there's MTS is involved in a legal matter.
Right.
So I would wish that any conversations, public conversations, at least be deferred. And if you wanted to ask questions offline, that would be, at this time, that would be appropriate. Because, again, the contract itself is not scheduled for right now. We're talking about the budget as it relates to what's going to happen in 2014. I would ask that of the supervisor.
I will honor that, Mr. Chairman.
Particularly since there is this legal matter is out there. Okay, thank you. Thank you, sir. Supervisor Bowen, then Stanford, then Jersey. Thank you, Supervisor Borkowski.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I'm looking at these numbers, and I'm remembering the conversations that we had last year during the budget season. Me and Supervisor Haas were working on pulling up those numbers so we could push our transit system to be better than what it is and more affordable. But it seems that in looking at the numbers for paratransit, we knew that if you reduce fares to a certain amount, that it would impact paratransit revenues and funding, and could be detrimental. So we were careful about moving forward with that proposal. So looking at the numbers that I'm seeing here, it doesn't look like it's reasonable for us to make the move for paratransit this year. But I do have some questions And I'll direct this to Mike. Was your office contacted in creating the proposal for $3 paratransit fares and getting that insight from your office on the impact that could have?
Mr. Chair, Supervisor Bowen, we were asked to provide some data and cost information, which we did.
Okay. And the second question is the 500,000 gap, even if we move it back to zero and we don't change fares, how does that 500,000 come about again? Can you explain that one more time of why, even if we would have left it the same, there's this $500,000 gap to make up? Go ahead.
Sure. Mr. Chairman and Supervisor, so if you imagine at the current $4 cash fare level, if the revenue was $1 million, and paratransit said by reducing the fare $1, you should bring that revenue down to $500,000. And we made the mistake of increasing it. Instead of going down to 500,000, we increased it to 1.5 million. So we went from a million current, should have been down to 500,000, instead went up to 1,500,000. If you wanted to leave it at the current revenue level of $1 million, you'd have to reduce the revenue $500,000, which has that tax levy impact.
Gotcha. Also, two more questions, Mr. Chair. My first question is about the implementation of the electronic fare boxes. Is there a date expected in this budget of when that starts in 14?
Mr. Chair and Supervisor Bowen, we anticipate starting to put the new fare boxes on the buses this fall, and we anticipate having the smart card working and implemented sometime later in the first quarter of 2014.
Okay. So that's about March, April, May?
That's correct.
You could say that. Okay. Are we printing tickets and passes for the whole year of 2014 in this budget?
Mr. Chair and Supervisor Bowen, we do not anticipate printing those fare forms throughout 2014.
Gotcha. So, are the savings from not printing those passes and tickets for the year, are those associated in the budget as well?
Mr. Chair and Supervisor Bowen, I'd have to get back to you on that.
Okay, and that was part of the information that we received last year, that there would be savings from printing. In creating a day pass and not printing transfers or different things of that nature. So that was just one of the things I didn't see in the budget. So I just wanted to make sure I got that clear. And I agree with my colleague, Supervisor Jersic, that, you know, 20,000 more miles in bus routes is one thing, but 20,000 miles in, I guess, just service to me was kind of kind of pulling the wool on my eyes. I actually thought that was expanding our system 20,000 miles, not doing the same thing. So would hope that we could actually expand routes instead of just create more service, but looks like that's what was included in this budget. Thank you.
Supervisor Drews?
Well, you know, I appreciate Supervisor Lipscomb's comments, and he did make me recall the rather large discussion we had last year about the safety on the buses and so on. And, you know, there is absolutely nothing in this budget that fleshes that out, how much money is spent on security on buses, even though that's a huge issue. So I'm going to ask the department to amend this budget to flesh that information out and to not lose it next year. So however we want to do that, Mr. Chair, I think it's a fair request. This is just another example of lack of information in the budget. So I would like to have the budget information amended to include the security, the hours received, and the amount spent on bus security. That's too big an issue for us to lose in the budget narrative. So that's my one request. And I'm not going to comment on the MV or RFP, but it just strikes me with having a fall rollout of the Fair Pass transition, and we've spent, and I've sat on transportation committee most of the time, we spent tremendous discussions on that and the difficulty of getting rid of the paper, transfers and all of those things. For the county executive to be throwing in a change of management at this time just boggles the mind. You need some consistency of management for a major change like that. I just can't understand that plan. But that's kind of an editorial comment. I'm going to make it and leave it. But I would like to have the department directed to amend our budget narrative to get the security information in here and to not lose it next year. So could I make that request, please?
Supervisor, this will not be the last time that we will entertain this budget. This is the first airing, first presentation. So, Mr. Juneau, did you hear what the supervisor is requesting?
Mr. Chair, yes.
Okay. So, information.
It's not really an amendment as changing things. It's just fleshing it out.
So more information will be provided, yeah. Supervisor.
But also, please, next year, let's keep it in the narratives.
And if, when the time comes to present amendments, you have an amendment to supplement the narrative?
So you're suggesting an actual amendment to do
to that. Supplement the narrative of the information that will be provided? Then
I'll work with Supervisor Lipscomb because I actually think he brought that forward. I appreciate it.
Okay. Thank you. Supervisor Stanford, then Lipscomb.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Thank you for bringing that up. How much was used on security last year? 1.5?
Mr. Chair and Supervisor Stamper, I don't have that number with me, but I believe we came in slightly under budget. So it was not quite the full 1.5.
Okay. So yeah, that'll be very helpful to see where the money was allocated and wasn't used.
Make your request for the budget.
Yeah, so I agree with that part. And since we're talking about amendments, I thought a request to correct the 1.5 was due today. Now, if it's not due today, then it looks like it'll be left up to the county board to try to correct it. So I thought it was going to be corrected so we can work on the budget based on the correction of it. So are you leaving the 1.5 deficit to be corrected by the county board?
Mr. Fudge, I believe the question is directed toward you, to you, I should say.
Mr. Chairman and Supervisors, we are working on an amendment. I'm not done with it yet. I have a draft that I'm ready to send down just to make sure it looks correct. We'd also wanted to take some time to see, the budget for appropriation for contingencies that has the child support funding. We wanted to get a final answer on that, which was due this week. So, and also the issue with the capital outlay contra to see if we could fold that in as well. So
okay.
It is coming, and we wanted to check on a couple of issues first. And so, yeah, there's no expectation that the board would fix the mistake. We'll have an amendment.
By the time. Okay.
Mr. Chair, does he have a champion for this amendment? Have you secured a champion?
Supervisor Jurczyk, Supervisor Stanford still has the.
Why don't you ask him that question?
I
would. Thank you, Chairman, and I don't have a problem with Supervisor Jurczyk taking over my my discussion right now. So I would honor her request, and then I'll get back to my questioning. But you owe me one.
So you yield to Supervisor Jurczyk. Supervisor Jurczyk.
Yes, but I would like to come back, though, please. Go ahead, Supervisor.
That's fine. Supervisor Jurczyk.
The question is, do you have a champion for this? I mean, you presented your budget.
Mr. Chairman and Supervisor, first of all, when we met with supervisors prior to the hearing beginning, we were advised to take this step of putting it into an amendment form. Obviously, when we sent out the email earlier, we received, as I mentioned, the feedback. And in that email, by the way, we did accept responsibility and apologize for the error that we made. We received the feedback that, you know, you guys need to come up with an amendment to fix this. This is a new process, I think, for all of us. There have been mistakes in the budget before that have either slipped by and not been found out until after the budget was done. So we disclosed the fact that we made a mistake early on and said we have ideas to fix it. We were told by some supervisors, and I think rightfully so, that put it in an amendment form that we can deal with it. And so we're working on that process now. So that is the process that we have been advised to follow. How your rules put that into action is certainly up to you, and obviously the county executive would support whatever fix we come up with.
Supervisor Joseph.
So thank you, Mr. Chair. I'll talk to the chair. I just want to make it clear: the budget amending process is the purview of the board. This is our opportunity to really address our priorities in the budget. And I would just caution Mr. Fudge. When he talks about amendments, he will talk about preparing proposed amendments that this committee may then, if we choose, to take it up. Not to suggest that they're just going to be throwing an amendment in.
And Supervisor, that's why I understand your question. Is there a champion? In other words, Mr. Fudge or his department could talk to a supervisor who in turn could offer an amendment that would provide a fix.
Probably should be a little careful about saying that county execs can support whatever we do.
Well, I'm
just saying, I don't know that getting carte blanche promises
sure
not
will.
To veto.
As you have just pointed out, there's a mechanism by which changes may be addressed, the amendment process. So I heard you earlier ask about a champion. So when you asked that, having heard what Mr. Fudge said, I suggest that someone he contact someone and maybe.
Well, and Mr. Chair, I mean, let's not forget we have the public attending. We have public listening in on these sessions.
Yes.
We shouldn't be giving false impressions that, you know, there's just going to be amendments coming from the county exec's office. That's not how it happens here, and we should be respectful of the board's process, where
yes.
we are right now. So that's why I'm perhaps making a little bit of an issue on this right now. So let's be careful with our language.
I appreciate that. Thank you. Thank you, Supervisor. Supervisor Stanford.
Thank you. Okay. Now, it looks like... Thank you, Mr. Chair. I know we talked about the CMAQ funding earlier, but there's no guarantee that we will receive the funding for 2014 after it ends in the middle of 2014. So are we prepared for that, or what if it's not approved?
Mr. Chair, Supervisor Stamper, yes, we are prepared for that. As I stated previously, we are looking at some cost savings from a number of operational items, and with that, that should be able to get us through to the end of the year.
Okay.
If we do not get the CMAQ funding.
Okay. Looks like we are expecting some revenue increases due to the new electronic collection fare implementation. How was that calculated?
Mr. Chair, Supervisor Stamper, a number of issues go into that. One of them is a reduction in fraudulent use of passes, and with the change in ultimately eliminating the paper transfer, those are some of the savings that we anticipate seeing through those items, through those areas.
Is there a particular number? Or we just assuming?
I believe we're looking at an increase of about $700,000 in fare revenue.
Okay. Is that how much potential revenue we lose yearly due to those items? We don't know, I assume. But is that where you got the number from? Is how much we use? Approximately how much do we lose due to fraud and the stuff you just named?
Supervisor Stamper, we don't have
no.
an exact number for that.
Okay. All right. So thank you, Mr. Chair.
Thank you, Supervisor.
No, I apologize. I always was.
Supervisor Cullen.
That's fine. I sort of wanted to follow up on something Supervisor Bowen asked on the printing costs. So do you have any idea what we spent this year on printing costs for transfers and tickets?
Supervisor Cullen, we'll have to get back to you on that. We have those numbers. I just didn't bring them with me.
Maybe, Director Fudge, if you could pass the word among staff to bring budget numbers to the budget hearings, that would be helpful for our consideration. And then you're anticipating, as you told him, in maybe March, April, or May, that we won't be using these transfers or tickets.
Mr. Chair, Supervisor Cullen, tickets will probably be eliminated first because the new fare box does not accept those, and so we're going to look at a different way of accepting those, but at some point we will phase those out. And as far as paper passes, those will be phased out throughout the year. The last paper passes that will be phased out will be the U-Pass, which will not occur until the fall of 2014.
And you don't have any figures or any knowledge of whether or not you used any reduction in printing is for budget preparation?
Would you come up with? Please identify yourself.
Bill Roberts, the Chief Financial Officer. The printing costs and associated costs of implementing the fare box. The bottom line of the whole thing is what we're going to get is a transfer of costs. Yes, printing costs will go down as the system is implemented, but we're going to have other costs that are going to increase. The maintenance of the smart card system and the electronic system. There's going to be a change in the ready fare system. We're going to have a change in the number of available places to buy passes. It's very difficult to estimate the changes specifically by department. We contacted other agencies, Phoenix, Boston, to find out. And they also had the same vendor, Scheid Bachman, for the fare boxes, to find out how their cost changed. And the bottom line was the overall cost didn't change, but they moved. Maintenance costs changed. Yes, printing will go down. We anticipate to have a little less staff and cashiers, hopefully. But those services are going to switch to other departments, such as customer services. There will be different types of problems and issues with the smart card system. Also, there's the cost of the smart card system, which you have a paper pass, it's a piece of paper. You have a smart card, it could be $2 dependent upon, or a dollar dependent upon where you buy them and the quantity you buy them. So what we anticipate is an overall zero change in the cost to operate the fare collection system, but we do anticipate a movement. It was very difficult to specifically identify where that movement was going to take place.
If I can continue?
Please.
And I don't doubt at all what you're saying. You're the expert. I'm certainly not. And maybe this could be, for me, sort of a primer in budget preparation. So do you have a line item for printing?
We have a function for printing. That's correct.
Okay. So then, for 2013, there was an amount put in that. For 2014, I assume that would be reduced because it's going to be shifted to another area. Based on what you
said. The actual budget, when things actually take place, I would anticipate that to be exactly correct.
Okay. And did you have to do that in order to prepare this budget?
I did not.
So what happens? Maybe I'm the stupid one here, but. So let's just pick a figure out of the air. Let's say you spent $1 million in 2013 on printing costs. And let's say this year, 2014, you're only going to spend, let's just say, $300,000 because of these. Then you have that $700,000 that you're going to need for other things, which you told me. I'm not disputing that. How do we know that there isn't just a $700,000, I don't want to use the term slush fund, but sort of money that you can find to do some other things with, as opposed to just, you know, zeroing out that particular thing, that particular item, because we aren't going to be printing anymore?
I don't know.
Okay. Thank you.
You're welcome.
Mr. Roberts, would you fill out one of these cards, please?
Sure.
Any other further? Supervisor Bowen.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. One question I forgot to bring up was, do we know how much paratransit is paid for by those who have insurance coverage or some type of entity that may cover the cost for them?
Mr. Chair, Supervisor Bowen, I believe you're talking about the agency fare, and that is an additional $12.55 above the passenger fare.
Okay. And is it, if we reduce the fare to $3 from $4, does that reduce as well in the what we collect from those agencies?
By the dollar.
Okay. Do we have figures of the impact that $3 change has on those fares too, or is that included in that? I think it's a $2 million number of the reduction in I thought I saw a $2 million number.
Mr. Chair, Supervisor Bowen, we provided that information to Mr. Fudge's staff in relation to what the change in the cost would be.
Okay, so it's safe to say on page 256, a reduction in program revenue of $2.7 million. That would be included in, if you reduce fares $3, not only losing money from people who pay it themselves, but also from those agencies, or no? Just trying to clarify the impact that $3 change has.
Mr. Chair, Supervisor Bowen, those numbers are reflect funds provided by the state. So that's separate from the issue we're talking about in the reducing of the fare from $4 to $3.
So it's like a reimbursement from the state of providing paratransit, and that reduces what we get from the state because of us making that price change?
Mr. Chair, Supervisor Bowen, I don't think there's any relationship between this number and the reduced fare number.
Okay. I think I'll follow. Thank you. Thank you, Mr. Chair.
Supervisor Stamper, before I go to the two individuals who'd like to speak. Supervisors Stamper and Lipscomb.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I know we said we're going to wait to get more information regarding the pending litigation, but when does the MCTS contract expire?
Mr. Chair, Supervisor Stamper, our current contract runs through the end of this year.
December?
That's correct.
Okay. So, what'd you say?
One month.
So what'll happen if the litigation is not over? You know what are we looking at?
Possibly we'll have a one month extension, a month to month.
Okay,
contract.
Is that that's an option? You can do month to month.
I believe that's probably in the contract.
Is that in the contract?
It's in most contracts.
It wasn't in the contract regarding that $8 million that everybody talked about, was it?
Okay.
So is it in this one? Remember that $8 million loss, according to records?
Maybe Director Dranza can give us some guidance.
There's up to a 1 year extension for the year of through the year of 2014,
which would end
at the end of 2014.
Does that mean month to month?
It's up to, it could be any point.
You can make it any month, however many months you want it?
Right.
Okay. Thank you, Mr. Chair.
Okay, thank you. Supervisor Lipsko?
Thank you, Mr. Chair. So going back to two things we've been talking about. On the paratransit side, so before we look at the alternatives and whether or not we should fix that hole or not drop the fare, what are the trends that you're seeing that were driving the recommendation to drop the fare? I mean, are we seeing, is the cost to provide the service going down? Are we getting more revenue from somewhere else? I mean, what drove that? I guess I'd like to understand that. What is the justification for that, other than just we'd like to? I mean, I'd like to drop all kinds of fares, but why that one in particular? I guess that's the administration. Did the department not ask for that? Was that not in the requested budget? So that was an administrative decision?
Yeah, that's a question for Mr. Fudge.
Okay.
Fair enough. Mr. Fudge.
Mr. Chairman and supervisors, it was a decision made during the summer, during the recommended budget phase by the administration. It was not in transit's request. To be perfectly honest, it came out of the budget, the hearings, the public hearings that we had with many paratransit riders who showed up. I was one of the ones who actually took that experience and made that as a policy alternative to the county executive towards the end of the process. And when it looked like the impact was only $500,000, which was what we were originally told, we were able to find that funding and put that in the recommended budget. So that was, it was not in transit's request. It was an alternative, an alternative adopted by the exec in his recommendation.
So there's nothing objective about trends changing that drove us to believe we should be able to do this for 25% less. It was just a desire. It's just a political desire to satisfy what we hear. I mean, we hear all kinds of. I mean, we heard it. Don't raise it. I mean, and yet, I thought that was that not this executive? When was it raised? I mean, we certainly heard objection to it when it was proposed to be raised. So, I guess I'm trying to understand that.
Dr. Colton, did you want to?
I think that actually is more appropriate that the exec's office would respond to that portion. I would expect DOS to respond to the trend question, but
please identify yourself.
As Director Fudge said, we discussed several options of different options to explore within transit, and this one seemed feasible because of the budget impact, and that's why we went forward with it.
Because it seemed like you could do it cheaply. It seemed viable, but it was not for all the execs talk about the data and the numbers and best practice and all that. This was not driven by any of that.
That is true. Did you hear his question, Dr. Politics.
I'm sorry.
Did you hear his question?
Can you repeat it? I'm sorry.
It was not driven by any objective analysis that costs are going down or there's greater efficiency or that we can. This was not data driven, other than the budget number appeared to be, you know, for $500,000 he could say that he would drop paratransit fares. It was.
Mr. Chairman, this was data driven. We looked at the fiscal impacts. This is a vulnerable population that. We've been hearing concerns about the fares for a long time. We looked at different other fixed routes and where we could have an impact, and this is where we felt, because of the fiscal impact, we could have an impact.
When were the fares raised, and whose proposal was that?
Mr. Chairman and Supervisors, and someone from Transit can correct me if I'm wrong, I believe they've been $4 for at least a few years now. I know in, I believe in the 2011 budget, then County Executive Walker's recommendation had a 25 or 50 cent increase, so it would have gone to 425 or 450, I believe, and that was rejected through the county board process. For exactly how long they've been $4, I don't honestly know. I can find out for you.
Okay. Well, I appreciate that. It sheds some light on how the decision was made. Going back to CMAQ, seem to be having a lot of discussion about the potential of, you know, what additional CMAQ we might get or how much that might be. But I'm interested in talking a little bit about the existing CMAQ allocation and what's projected for carryover. So it's my understanding that for 2013, a little over $8.5 million in CMAQ, but that MTS had reported that as of the end of August, $5.8 million was used, with a third of the year or a quarter of the year left. A third of the year left. That would only leave $2.78 million. But yet, the budget for 14 shows a $4.3 million carryover. Those don't seem to line up for me. Do we have another shortfall to talk about?
Mr. Chair, Supervisor Lipscomb, I can explain the carryover of $4.3 million. I think the initial award was $16.9 million.
Okay.
Shortly after that award, one of the agencies that received approximately $2,075,000 decided not to accept that award, and so that was approved to be transferred to Transit. Okay, so if you remember back when this started, we did not start it until the end of January in 2012, early February. So we actually have 1 month of CMAQ funding that has already been scheduled for 2014, and that's $707,000. We have this $2,075,000 that we got additional money, and then through some savings that we occurred in the 2012 actual compared to budget, those numbers add up to $4.3 million.
And that includes the fact that my numbers were only through August 31st, so even with the remainder of the year, there's no additional expenditure from this.
Mr. Chair, Supervisor Lipscomb, for 2013, we will spend the $8.5 million that was adopted for 2013. So there's no carryover from the actual money that was adopted and will be spent actual for this year.
Okay. So the 4.3 is all, that's the savings and the 2.1 additional, roughly. Okay.
That's correct.
I appreciate that clarification. Mr. Chairman, the Co-Chairman Cullen's questions, the answers to Co-Chairman Cullen's questions left me baffled. I need to understand, you know, I thought that for the lack of detail that we see, that there was all sorts of line item budgets behind this that the departments have. I understand that apparently they don't. I understand that what's in front of us is what the administration finalized and proposed. And so maybe the department doesn't know where the administration made their adjustments, and so they have to come back and do those line item budgets, or where does that exist? I can't believe there isn't backup. I mean, are you telling me we're just going to vote on just blanket revenue and expenditure budgets that are just, you know, a couple lines? There is not detail. So can the department explain to me what detail goes into this preparation that we don't see, and how is it possible? I can understand that the department doesn't know the number off the top of their head, but that they're not saying that, yes, I have that in a spreadsheet somewhere or in an accounting system that I can pull up baffles me.
Yes, sir. As Supervisor Cullen has indicated, that when departments come, they should have their figures with them. Their financial people should have their notebooks, their binders, whatever it is they need, so they can refer to whatever information is there that we can ask of them.
Yeah.
As you've indicated, the department takes figures and works with the administration, I should say, takes whatever departments have. They sit down and they work out figures, and maybe the administration puts final tweaks on them, but the raw data usually comes from the departments. And if nothing else, they should have those figures when they come before us. Mm-hmm. They should have those binders, notebooks, budgets.
I mean, it seems to me that the fundamentally it's even worse than that. I mean, I could understand if they just didn't have it at their fingertips, but the answer I thought I heard was, I don't have that. That's the level of detail we prepare later. And I'm saying, well, that level of detail, it seems to me, would have been, I mean, how do you recommend a budget to us if they don't have it? Who has it? Somebody better have done it, the budgeting in that level of detail.
Mr. Chair and Supervisor, I apologize for not having that level of detail today. When we get back to the office, we will pull together that information for you.
Okay. So did I misunderstand the answer then? So it wasn't that level of detail doesn't exist or that we have not yet, but that was how the answer came across, that we have not line item budgeted this in that level of detail yet.
Mr. Chair and Supervisor, I don't know that we have the knowledge at this time due to not having actually had a year under our belt of actually operating a system with a new electronic fare box to get to that detail. But as I stated, I will provide you to the best of my ability what we do have.
So then how did DAS make a recommendation? How does the administration make this recommendation to us? If the department doesn't have the detail, how did you come up with your number? How can I rely on what's in front of me?
Fiscal and Budget Administrator Fudge, please.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Supervisors, this budget is a little different from most other county departments in that because it's a contract with an outside provider, certainly every other county department, we can see the line item for printing. We get the information from the outside vendor who gives us a fairly detailed spreadsheet of the data. Our analyst does go through that. The spreadsheet we're given doesn't break out specific printing costs, but those are built into, the operating costs for the system. Our analyst then asks, questions related to that, goes through the process. Certainly, we don't have the expertise to challenge the contract operator's assumptions about printing costs and things like that, so we rely on them to tell us what's reasonable. And in this case, we agreed with their assumptions. We didn't make any changes. So this is a little, if this were a normal county department, I'd be able to tell you, looking in our budget software, exactly how much we spend on printing. This is a special case. So with regard to the budget narrative, the specific line item for printing wouldn't be in last year's version either. There is supplemental information that you hopefully all received at the back of the narrative, a gigantic spreadsheet showing line item information for every single department, again, except for this one because it's an outside contractor. It shows their operating costs as a whole. And I'll leave it at that, and if you have any other questions.
Supervisor, thank you. Supervisor Stamford.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Well, that goes back to the same question regarding the line item for the security. So it's basically, any question we have regarding a certain allocated amount of money, we need to know if it was spent on that service. So the question for the security is the same thing. That line, how much was allocated for that based on how much we gave you? Well, it sounds like the same thing, but I guess it, you know, since it's contracted out, it's a little different, but they should still be able to provide this budget.
Should have some answers.
Right. This is a budget. This is where the money goes. It still needs to be clear.
Yeah. Someone should have some answers. Yeah. Supervisor, you finish, Supervisor.
Thank you.
Supervisor Grayson.
And I will limit my comments to the chair, but it's just spectacular here listening to how that decision was made on the paratransit fees. I mean, the Federalist Papers and James Madison talked about each branch of government will jealously guard their powers to make the system work, by the way, checks and balances. That is basic to the whole way systems of government get set up. So when you have the county executive go out and do budget hearings with the public, which is a prerogative of this legislative branch to do the public hearings, and then makes a policy decision unilaterally based on the public hearings that he is holding, is a fundamental flaw in his process, the county exec's process. Those public hearings are held by the legislative branch. That's what committees do every single month. And I really sometimes don't believe the county exec gets his job. His job is to execute policy established by this board. So when we hear that he went out and did public hearings on his budget, he seems to think that all he has to do is go to the budget and get a blessing, and that's the way policy is established around here. And that is not the case. Now, you know, by the way, I did ask this question because I got a request from someone who manages the IRIS program, whether the paratransit reduction will apply to agency fees. And the answer there is no. The paratransit reductions are only for those individual riders. So, and the comment I want to make here on that is those folks who get paratransit rides through agencies probably aren't capable of going to these great hearings that the county exec is holding. So he didn't hear from them.
Yes.
Apparently, therefore, it didn't translate into new policy for the county exec's office. So we need to jealously guard our ability to represent our districts because, quite frankly, the county exec went to St. Francis to have a budget hearing. Never had the courtesy to say, Jersic, I'm coming into your district and we're going to have a hearing in St. Francis. And he got a very nice op-ed in the journal about that hearing. But that's because it was all one-sided and without the checks and balances that go on with the legislative branch. Until the county exec understands that when he comes into District 8, there should be some courtesies provided so that the representative of that district is also present. He just continues to ignore his basic role, which is a county exec. And this is basic. And this is just amazing to me that he is going to set policy through public hearings way beyond what he is supposed to be doing as a county exec. And it's really disrespectful to the legislative process and to the representative of each of our districts. We are here representing those districts. So I just want to, you know, maybe we need a little education here. This goes right back to the Federalist Papers. So thank you for that leeway.
Thank you, Supervisor. Supervisor Broderick, who's been sitting here for a while.
Thank you, Mr. Broderick. Chair. You know, it occurs to me that if accepting outside vendors' figures with no verification or supporting data doesn't diminish our confidence in figures provided to us by the executive branch, what would? I mean, this is, and I know I'm in a sense echoing what my colleague Supervisor Jerzyk has said, but this is stunning. This is absolutely stunning. And what does it mean when we are going to be given a contract that we have no ability to make adjustments in? I think this points up the state legislature, the current iteration of that branch of government at the states, absolute disregard for checks and balances in imposing upon us the inability to properly, on behalf of our constituencies, review contracts. Where this is going to lead, I think we already have some sense of. And when it does lead there, I hope that the local news outlet will publish its regrets in red letters.
Thank you, Supervisor.
For the endorsement of that.
Thank you, Supervisor Broderick. Supervisor Bowen, then I'm going to go to the cards. This weekend.
Thank you, Mr. Chair.
Speak all morning,
be quick,
all afternoon.
I know you have cards.
Deficits. Need for information.
I think it's just clear that we're seeing moves of the heart and not of the head. And I just want to be very clear on the estimate of, because the cost of paratransit continues to rise. We're looking at, I think, $28 per ride in 2014.
I believe the narrative mentions $28.80 okay. as the cost.
I think you might be right. Yeah, $28.80. So on the fixed bus route side, we looked at this last year. That actually created money. And we saw that change wouldn't impact paratransit, but it would cost too much money for the county to make that change. But in this case, it's clear that this costs us a good deal of funds to pull this off of trying to lower fares. And I guess I appreciate the county executive for listening to constituents, but you have to look at the whole picture. I also want to look at, is there an actual figure on how much 20,000 miles cost in making the claim that, oh, we're going to put back in our system 20,000 miles? Do we know how much that costs? Miles.
We will provide that exact
okay.
cost.
Okay. And I'm sure that you can, but it's, I mean, to just make claims that we can just do things without actual figures or the data is kind of alarming. So I look forward to getting the answers, and I'll let the speakers that are here to speak today go ahead. Thank you, Mr. Chair.
Supervisor Stanford and then Angela
okay.
Walker.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. So with all this coming back, when do they come back? With all this information that we need?
Oh, this.
Is there more? Is another information?
There will be another hearing. Mm-hmm.
Just like this.
Regarding this.
Okay.
Regarding this.
And when was that?
And I will say it in this context. There will be another hearing, and whether it will happen before amendments are provided or at least proffered, I don't know. We'll just see how things go.
I think it's before that.
But there will be a schedule as it relates to the amendments so that the various departments will come forth, and if questions can be answered along with directing responses to the amendments.
Okay, I'd like to add. There'll
be an opportunity.
So I'd like to, when was that?
Because otherwise we'll be here for 3 months.
When was that $5 million surplus realized? Was that in 2013? When was that $5 million surplus,
Mr. Fudge?
Mr. Chairman, Supervisor, it's 2012.
Okay. Do we have the information on how that was developed, where that surplus came from?
Mr. Chairman, Supervisor, it was largely due to the decrease in paratransit rides. Obviously, as the number of rides has shrunk, the cost has gone down.
Okay. So we have it.
Correct. And Mr. Chairman, Supervisor, that's the reason you see the reduction in cost and the reduction in the number of rides, is that we're reducing the budget down to reflect
surplus.
Activity. Yeah, and the surplus. Yep.
Okay. All right. Thank you, Mr. Chair.
Ms. Angela Walker of ATU 998.
Mr. Chair, while she's coming up, can I just say, in terms of the timing of getting information back, I mean, if we wait, that information doesn't get back to us till then it's not helpful in preparing.
The information should be provided to the committee
as soon as possible.
When information should be provided to the committee, you ask for something,
yeah.
It should be provided very shortly
okay.
after you ask. I mean, the information
okay,
is something that
sure.
you should have, should be able to digest,
masticate, you know,
right.
think about it. And you'll have that information to answer the questions that you've asked.
Okay, I just wanted to make sure that they were not expecting to bring that back the next time, because at that point, amendments will be in front of us, and it'll be useless.
The request is, you've made the request today, you made the request yesterday, you made the request earlier. For whatever you've requested, those departments should provide that information to you as soon as they can get it.
Thank you.
Gather the information, collect the information, and send it. Or have meetings with you, whatever the case may be. Ms. Angela Walker. Good morning, ma'am.
Good morning, supervisors, chairman. I am the outgoing legislative director for the Amalgamated Transit Union Local 998. I am only here this morning to ask that this body, who has always been a responsible steward of Milwaukee County resources, continue to do that. I do not believe in the outflow, particularly now, of money that is so badly needed in Milwaukee County to an outside company. I also would like to see you have more say, because of what I've been listening to this morning, I'm embarrassed. I am not going to run defense for a company that does not run defense for my people that are out there being attacked. We have brought our issues to you more than once. You know where we stand on these things. I'm not running defense for them anymore. I don't believe in outsourcing to Texas, but I also don't believe in you having to deal with the lack of transparency and preparedness that you're seeing this morning. If that means that you have to bring transit in-house, we would absolutely be supportive of that. All I'm asking, as a driver, as a constituent, as someone who has busted my tail for the last 2 years in this position with trying to make sure transit gets the attention and funding that it deserves in this county, please look out for the people who are most impacted, not just us workers, but the community that we serve. And if that means that you are the direct administrators of this transit system, then so be it. Thank you.
Thank you. Any questions? Comments? Thank you very much. Mr. David Beck.
Buck.
Buck. I'm sorry.
The Milwaukee Bucks.
Of the Transit Advisory Council, David Buck. Pardon me, sir.
Right.
Someone assist Mr. Buck.
I'll be okay.
You got it?
I have it. Okay, thank you very much. Oh, thanks.
Thank you for your patience, Mr. Buck.
My pleasure. Okay. My name is David G. Buck. I am the vice chairperson of the Transit Plus Advisory Council. I echo Ms. Walker's sentiments about Dallas, Texas, and MV Transportation. The council feels that we would be better served with the current as is. We are in the dark overall on what this new proposal will give us. I also, along with our council members, support the reduction in the fees for our transit tickets. Let me give you a quick example. Someone mentioned about the tickets. Let's go and, as we fondly say, let's do the math. The math goes like this. One ticket is $4 for right now. 10 of them is $40. Okay? 4 times 10, $40. Time a multiple of books. So it goes up and up and up and up. And frankly, the reduction fee would be a little bit better for the quality of life of people who have to decide whether or not to buy the transit tickets or to go take care of their health or whatever. We also appreciate the continued funding of the new Freedom Transit program that helps the fixed route transit with the disabled and the who needs to ride the buses. We have had a lot of good success with this program over there in Transit Plus's program. We feel that that must be continued, and I feel the same way on that. We would appreciate if you keep everything as is, including the overall service area, which includes Ozaukee and Waukesha counties, the extension of that. I have looked into that deal for a speech for another organization, and I have found that most of them do use the 3/4 mile rule deal of the ADA. However, I would prefer if we stay as is. As I'm fond of remembering, if it ain't broken, why fix it? Overall, we feel that it is of importance that we not worry about the contract until the appeal is settled. But overall, we do quite well with what we have. One more thing. The last time that our county exec wanted to speak to us, he sent over his PR committee. That was PR chair, his representative. Frankly, I thought, as also a member of the PR committee for our people, as well as a member of the council, that was a waste of our valued time hearing from him instead of from the county exec. We would appreciate it in the future, and I especially would appreciate if any supervisors or any county officers come, please come and speak before us, period. That would help us a great deal. I'm not laying that out as an insult or an argument or a complaint, but so be it. But I feel that that is of importance to the council that we hear from you about what you think is. And that is how I feel overall. I feel that the quality of life must be maintained at all costs for all citizens. I am one of those users. So you got the face of who rides on them, on these vans and that. Two vans, one taxi service, and the buses. That's what we have. So that's it.
Thank you, Mr. Buck. Any questions, comments to Mr. Buck? Thank you. Would anyone else from the public like to speak on these budgets? No. Seeing no indication, this meeting is adjourned.